I would just like to say, you know, that this is a very old house, and it did belong to a Dr. Addison, who married a niece of Oliver Cromwell's.
Is that right?
Yes. I think Dr. Addison built this house because, first of all, there was just the front. Well, then 100 years later, there was a back portion added to it, which made an L-shaped house.
And you enjoy living there?
I enjoy yes, I'm very fond of this house. It's got quite low rooms, you know.
Yes.
Oh, it is nice.
Does it have a very large garden to the house?
No, oh no. Oh, quite a nice size garden.
A sizable garden.
At the back.
Do you enjoy gardening?
Yes, oh, very fond of it.
Very successful too.
How?
Well, evidence, you can see all flowers blooming.
But I've got mine back to your garden.
Everything in apple pie order. Everything very good.
Oh yes, my husband's very keen on it.
Yes, he is, yes.
When you see the big house, obviously you can see it from your back way.
Do
you ever have longings to, or you wish that things had changed and you were still living there?
No.
You like your small house?
I like smaller house. Small house. Because wouldn't it be difficult to keep it up now?
Staff.
Think of the staff or lack of it.
How many staff did you have when you lived there?
Five in the house.
Five in the house?
House, yes. And then
and Crick was the gardener?
No, he was at the school.
Ah, yes.
No, we had... Do you remember old James Bailey?
Yes.
He was the vegetable
garden. Oh, was he
garden. Yes. Oh, he was with the family for years.
Yes.
He left Mrs. Taylor at the place...
Yes, that's
when
right.
He was 10 years old, he worked in the garden until then. And then he went to them, to their farm. Then he, not so long after that, he must have come back to Mother and Father at Beechhurst.
Yes, I see.
And he stayed with them until he was 75, I think.
Did he really? Sorry, God.
Did you come through Sutton just now?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was born at Sutton, weren't we?
Yeah.
It was 1902 when we left there to go to Auchenberry. Then we came from Auchenberry to Houghton and had the water mill. And they took a film there at Houghton Mill one year. One of our rooms is a changing room, the artists and that, yeah.
What year, was that?
Threw a man out the top window, well, it wasn't really a man, but...
A dummy,
but...
Yeah.
Oh.
What year would this be?
Oh, that'd be later on.
Yeah.
And then...
But how did you get from Auchenberry to... You got there on a horse and cart, you said?
In a horse and cart, one of these high carts, right there with the seats back to back.
Yeah.
There was.
And you had a bit of trouble.
Ethel, Nance, Dolly, Wynn, Reen, Tom, about 9 of us in this.
And there was one boy, and how many girls?
9 girls.
9 girls and one son.
Yeah, one boy. And he's still alive. Tom is, as far as I know.
Yeah.
He was the other week, but.
When you got there, you told me earlier on that. When you were on the horse and cart, something happened, didn't it?
Yes, we had a thunderstorm.
And of course, there were no protection. Jack got hard behind a tree.
We got behind a tree and we were scared stiff, all of us. we got this hen coop hanging on the back with the chickens in, and the, and a magpie, tame magpie we had, we brought with us.
Yeah.
And
What, you brought all your possessions all in the one car?
Oh, no, the old cart brought that, the furniture and that.
Mm.
And we used to, there used to be two men at the mill, my father and another man. They used to be out all day long with the carts, collecting people's gleaning up. The people used to go gleaning, you don't see that now.
No.
We used to go gleaning. The farmers used to put a branchy tree in the fields that they didn't want anymore. And we could go in. We used to have these great big aprons and pockets and pick this up. My father used to bring the sacks.
And that was all the scraps?
That was all the scraps. And my father used to bring the sacks of flour and put it in the pantry, say, that'll last us all winter. We never had baker's bread.
Was he milling all year round? Or did he just...
Oh, yes, they were busy there all the year round.
Mm.
And then, of course, trade dropped off like they did everything else. And Mr. Belton owned the mill, you see, and he sold it.
Mm.
And Loch Lampson bought it. They're a Huntingdonshire Member of Parliament, Oliver Loch Lampson.
What year would this be?
Oh, yeah, what year would that be?
But 30s,
Oliver Loch Lampson, he was our MP, he bought it. My father was great friends with him because he used to drive him about, and he was a strong Conservative, and he was a Conservative MP for Huntingdonshire.
Mm.
And he bought the house, you see, and they wanted him to buy the mill. He said, you can have it for £100. My father said, no, I don't want that, it'll cost no end to keep in repair. But he could have got it for £100.
Yeah.
Then he knocked down to 50.
Did he buy it then?
No, he didn't buy it.
He didn't buy it at 50?
National Trust bought it.
Yeah. This was in about 1933,
I
think.
Oh, about that, 1934. He could have got it for £50, but he said, no, it cost too much to keep it up. But we used to go in there. I used to go in there at night with him, shooting the rats. He used to shoot rats, and you see these rats going down the stairs.
Yeah.
See their eyes glistening.
Yeah.
I wasn't scared of them like I am now.
No.
But
what did you used to do with the bodies? You used to chuck them away, I suppose.
Oh, what he used to do, throw them in the river, I think.
Yeah.
Then we had a salmon washed up there once.
Mm.
And my father said, no, don't you say anything, you children. We had it cooked and it was beautiful.
Why didn't he want anything said? Because
we're supposed to give it up, aren't you?
Yeah.
He said, there'll be another one come up here. Because we all come upstream salmon day, you know.
Yeah.
And jumped on the eel traps. We used to send enough eels, take enough eels in the eel boxes that they had there on near the back of the mill. They used to pay the rent of the mill.
Good heavens.
Send them up to, my father used to take them in a cart to Huntingdon Station, send them up to Billingsgate Market.
Yeah. Did your father lease the mill then, did he? Or did he pay rent?
No, he worked for Mr. Belton, the owner of it.
Mm.
And he used to come over once a week in his court, in his horse and cart from Spalwick.
Mm.
And have dinner there with us.
Mm. How did your father remain at the mill then after, at Mill House after?
Well, he bought the mill, he bought the house, and we counted the money, the £275 there was, like we counted it in golden sovereigns.
Did you really? Yeah. And that was also a field behind it, wasn't it?
No, that wasn't our field. That was the what's the name? We bought those, the osier beds. That still belongs to Con, you know, at Mill House.
The hosiery beds.
The osier beds opposite.
Yeah.
Right down to Dolly Butcher's they were on.
Good heavens.
Yeah. I suppose if anything happens to her, it'll be sold.
Yeah. Because we should explain that he married again, didn't he?
Yes, and
the lady who lives there now, how old would she be now?
Ooh. I think she's not much older than me, my stepmother. Still got stepmother life. Dad left the mill, we had these three taxis.
Mm.
And then we had 50 boats and punts on the river. We used to look after them. Charged 6 months an hour.
It's about £1.25 now.
Have a book.
Yeah.
Sundays and that, because, I mean, it used to be full of visitors. The village used to, everybody used to take in.
Even in them days, people.
In those days, yes. We used to have known people come down to the village. We used to meet the trains. And I used to row up the river and meet them. Charged 6 months rowing up Duntingdon back.
Did you really?
Yes, your mum and I used to row up and meet them. Carry the cases from under the station. Or Gomanchester Station it used to be then, but of course there's no thing there now. And
did you feel proud because you lived at the mill? I mean, you know, with so many people.
Well, we didn't realise what a nice place it was. Of course, it's all commercialised now, isn't it? I mean, we had in the old days where those people.
Yeah, but basically the meadows have stayed the same, haven't they? I mean.
Oh yes, the meadows are just the same, but there used to be no end of artists come down and paint the mill.
Mm. Because it's a massive place. I mean, when you walked in there at night, were you ever scared? Because, I mean, there wouldn't be any electric light.
Oh, no, we had no electric light at home.
No?
Well, we were the only people in the village that had a water toilet.
Were you?
Yes. We were the only ones, because that ran into the river, of course.
Yeah.
But there was no lights in the village. My mother used to put a candle in the pantry window for us to see if we went up the village at night.
Didn't you?
Yes.
Now, we're living so close to the river, I mean, did you ever experience any bad floods?
No, we never got flooded.
Never got one?
No.
In all the years you lived?
No, not out, because we stand on the hill, really.
Yeah.
Our house did.
Mm.
The horses used to be there in the stables to go out.
How many horses would he kept, do you know?
Well, I think we had two, if not three horses there.
Mm. And what was he grinding the
grinding the corn and maize and everything.
That must have been a dusty old job.
And people used to, yes, he did, that's what made him practically leave because he had asthma.
Did
and
he?
My mother got asthma as well.
Mm.
And they said it was the dust from the mill, but the week he stopped at the mill, the asthma went.
Good heavens.
He used to get asthma terrible.
Mm.
And they used to burn this Potter's asthma cure, you know, and there was no things as tablets and that in those days.
No.
But now I went back and kept the Jolly Butchers, you see.
Which is the pub in the village, isn't
it? When I was married, I went to the Falcon to live. Then the Jolly Butchers was going, three Jolly Butchers, and we kept that for 7 years.
Mm.
And that was 10 shillings a week, that's all.
10 shillings a week?
That's all that cost us.
That's
we were
a big
paying
pub,
12 and 6 for a council house at Huntington's a week. And we got it for 10 shillings a week.
That's all I can get.
I often think about it.
Yeah.
Well, the day we went in there, it was a very, very cold winter. It was in January and Mary was a baby. They were tearing the paper off the tap room wall to light the fire with. Oh, it was a place.
Was it really?
The man in it has got the DTs.
Yes.
And we kept it for 7 years.
Mm.
And had the... We used to let the first paddock for 10 shillings a week, so we
that paid
were
for
well
you
away.
See, both my grandfathers was called shepherds, or they was. How they became to look after land, that all of us was grazed by individual farmers, mainly horses them days, you know, because the horses was needed to work, and in the summer they wasn't needed to work on the farms.
Mm-hmm.
Till the corn ripened. Mm-hmm. It was put on the marshes to graze to keep them.
Yeah.
My forefathers had the job of looking after them, counting them, keeping the dikes full of water, and to make sure if one got bogged in, they got it out and looked after the cattle as well.
Ten,
of course, a lot of the land was owned by people far afield, like in South Walden. I know there was a lot in this, and there was a lot in Kent. Would send their horses and cattle here for the summer grazing. So when those horses went off in November and December, the people who looked after in the summer was out of work. They didn't want them back on the farm to work with them, it was too far for them to go. So what they done, they said, look, we'll look after your, this is my grandfather's near story, I mean it's absolutely true, we'll look after your cattle on the marshes, providing we can have the shooting routes and everything what's on it. You know, when your cattle's gone, belong to us, the mushrooms, the eel catching, shooting rights, to keep us in a living till you come back. Well, that was just right for these owners of the cattle and horses, because when they brought them back, they wanted to make sure there was someone there to look after them. So yeah. That's how it started.
Yeah.
So when you look after cattle and horses all winter, all summer, you had the waterfowling rights, the fishing rights, and everything until the cattle came back again, so you had a living. And my great uncle, my grandfather's brother, lived in the wash. There was only one house in the wash. It was a pub years and years ago. And when I went to school, I was about 9 or 10 years old. I was playing on this bridge there one night. Used to fetch cigarettes for the older men, the boys and that, you know. They used to be players for 10 for sixpence. 10 woodbines for fourpence.
In the good old days.
And there was a park drive, and there was cigarette cards in each packet. Well, what they used to do, they'd gang up and put a hand in the pocket and pay a penny each, and guess the number of the cigarette card. The nearest one to it, they paid a penny each, six of them. The one who guessed the nearest to the number which was in the card won the cigarettes. Well, I was runner. I used to run from the top of the bridge to the pub to fetch this bag of cigarettes, open the packet and tell them what number it was. For my little trip, they used to give me one cigarette at 10 years old, I think. Unbeknown to me, one night, was on the bridge, and he said, "Come on, Josh, fetch a pack of cigarettes," gave me the sixpence, run after 10 players. There's a big lump of sugar beet on the side of the road, and I didn't know it. I toppled over it, and a big stone, because it's all gravel roads, went right under my kneecap, you know, about that length, and penetrated. They'd carry me home. My father pulled it out, and a piece of skin spear, cut with a cutthroat razor, and filled the hole up with iodine, you see. Because I was off school, I couldn't walk, and luckily enough, the vicar at Wellney, Reverend Wilford, his daughter was a trained nurse. They took me over there, and she said, "Oh, you'll have to have a few days off." Couldn't afford a doctor then, you know.
Yeah.
Wrapped it all up, said, "You better have a holiday, you see, from school, and have it dressed for 2 or 3 days, and then you no need to come over here, you can have a complete rest." My great uncle lived in the Wash. He used to visit my mother and them every Saturday night. My great aunt said to me, "Come and have 2 or 3 weeks with me. You won't be near a gravel road, you won't fall down, you can have a nice lay down on the bank." I'm getting the rest, saw him coming home with his bags of plover he was catching, looking after the cattle and shooting the ducks, and that's how I got interested.
Hmm. And how did you...
I was the only grandchild out the whole lot to take it on.
You were obviously, well...
Started at 10 years old.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, by the time this project came along from Peter Scott, you were well qualified to take it on.
Oh,
but
yes,
how
right.
Do you actually get into the job itself? Because you are the founder member from this area, aren't you?
Well, what happened... my father looked after about 200 acres. I helped him before the war, and I went to join up, and the war broke out on the Sunday. I went to join on the Monday with my friend. He was 3 months underage, and I said, "Well, if you don't take him, you don't take me." So I waited till December, till he was of age, and I went in December the 15th, and I went over to Greece and got took prisoner of war.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got back in 1945, end of 45, beginning of 46, I came out of the army in 46. The old shepherd down here, named Hagen Smart, he was the son of James Smart, the famous skater, the world champion,
yes,
was taken ill, and he had 500 acres he looked after, plus my 200 acres my father done. He sent for me one night and said, "You know, one of my kidneys has collapsed, and I've got to pack in. Would you like to take over my 500 acres?" He'd had a word with all the owners, and they all agreed that I was the man for the job, because I'd had pre-war experience, worked with my father on the washers, mm-hmm, and that's how I started.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when the trust came in 1965, 66, the first time Peter came, I think 67, that's right, he asked me to be warden within a half hour of meeting him, and I couldn't make out why. But he'd been around all the owners the same as other people. Said, "We get on all right with Josh, he's the man, he's the bird man," and he said, "Well, I was a professional war fella, but I mean, you can all sell your gun and buy binoculars," which I done.
I see.
And yeah, I didn't buy binoculars, he gave me.
I always wanted to come back to Soham. I'd got that in my mind. So he said, "How are we going to live? I haven't got much coming in." I said, "We'll live somehow." I said, "Wait until we get there, we'll get a place to live." And I had been hoarding a little bit of money, you see. And there was this cottage advertised, and they were not supposed to sell it. It was condemned. So we didn't have to pay very much for it, but it cost us as much to have it done up on Broad Peace. And Broad Peace wasn't like it is now. It was lovely, all fields. It was beautiful. And I called it the Little Crooked House. There wasn't a straight wall. There wasn't a straight floor. There wasn't a straight ceiling. But I had it done up from top to bottom exactly how I wanted it. And I loved that place, and so did Harry. We had a beautiful garden. It was no garden when we went. Somebody came and scythed it for us, and we started right from scratch. And I don't think there were two happier people on God's earth, because I loved the open air. I loved the birds. And there was a field at the back of us with an old horse in, that I made friends with, that I loved. Hay was happy because he could be outdoors. We both acquired a bicycle.
Mm.
And
what year would this be? What would we be talking about?
1955 we came down to.
And did you find a small job to keep you going, because you said Harry was worried a little?
No. I said I've got to lay the money out, and he couldn't manage money.
Mm.
So I said, you hand it over to me and take so much back for your pocket and give me the rest. And then he got an increase in his pension. But he never got the old age pension. It's been amended since.
Mm.
He hadn't got enough stamps on his card. And he had £3, I think it was, from the fire brigade. But just before he died, that was increased substantially. And I'm better off now than I've ever been. It was during my married life.
Mm.
He didn't enjoy his rise. But we managed. We grew our own vegetables, you see. And I had nothing, so I knew how to manage. I never had a great deal, so I managed all right. I said, that's my worry, we'll manage. And manage we did.
Mm.
And I just save up, and we had outings. If it was lovely weather, I'd say, how about Dad Hunt Stand on tomorrow, Harry? We had a train railway then. And he was always agreeable to go out somewhere. So I'd go and hop up to Staples and get a pound of sausages, and we always went in June when they're fresh vegetables, so I'd cook the old sausages and new vegetables all in a plastic bag and a box, and go and have a drink or two, and then we'd sit on a seat on the front of town Stanton and have our lunch, race down, get the 8 o'clock train, throw our old bikes on the roadside, and they'd be there when we came back.
Different from today, you couldn't do that today.
We did. And we'd come home, and we'd get home about 4 o'clock, and as we came in the train, we saw our little house. And as poor as it was, we loved that with such an intensity. We just used to sit spellbound as we went past in the train. We just say, there's our little house. All that water down the mere, the dag was so thick. And my father, when he wanted to know what the weather was, especially when he got walked to Newmarket, he'd look out at night, look over the ponds, and he'd say, the dag's arising, there'll be a nice day tomorrow. And so when that dag was floating along, it was going to be a lovely day. And we used to get a lot of that down Broad Piece because there's a lot of water. So this evening, the sun was setting in the west, the west is over there, and I stood there, and the beauty of the fields, and this river. And there was a kingfisher. My cup of joy was full with that kingfisher down there. And I looked over, and there was Ely Cathedral. And I couldn't believe my eyes, because it was going along on a wave like an ocean liner. And I could almost see the fretwork of the masonry with this vivid red sunset right behind it, and the white fluffy dag in front, just going along, billowing along, and it was as though the cathedral was floating on the sea. And to my dying day, I will never forget it. It was one of the most beautiful sunsets I have ever seen. And it was something you wouldn't see again. You had to catch it at that moment.
He got one taxi, then he got two taxis, and we had three taxis.
Mm.
He had one, Tom had one, and I had one.
You used to drive a taxi?
I used to, yes.
This is before you took a test, didn't you?
Yes.
Or needed to?
Oh, yeah, went all round Wales, took a clergyman all round Wales. Yeah.
How much was the fare in them days, do you know?
An old two-model Ford, too.
Did it?
It was charged sixpence a mile.
Sixpence a mile?
Yes, Arthur Crown, Huntingdon, 2 shillings to St. Ives.
Yeah.
To get there.
But I suppose that was a lot of money in them days.
It was a lot of money. You could do with a lot with the 2 shillings. Now, we used to have so many journeys to do.
Yeah.
I used to keep my list, and he used to have his list.
How did you get on for petrol stations? Because there couldn't have been...
Well, we had a petrol pump.
Yeah, but I mean, when you were out on the road, say you went, you just said you went to Wales. I mean, was there garages everywhere?
Oh, yes, there was garages where you could get some petrol.
And so there was no problem then?
No. I went to Wales. I took a clergyman around Wales. I went around there for a month's tour.
Did you?
Yes. I went all the... And the chauffeurs laughed at me in the big car, said, you'll never get round Wales, around those hilly parts.
Yeah.
I remember we stopped at Lichfield the first night, and I was scared stiff. After I'd seen these chauffeurs, they said, you going round Wales with old Tin Lizzie, you'll never get up that hill. And I saw some of them stuck, and I got up, but I burnt my brakes out at Shrewsbury.
Yeah.
And I never did tell them I burnt them out. I took the seat of the car out. Of course, you don't remember the old T-Mobile. Ever seen an old T-Mobile?
I've seen one, yeah.
I'd do everything, make it talk. The whole thing used to rattle. We'd only got curtains, you know. There's no...
We'd
put a hood up if it rained and get your fingers squashed.
What about if you broke down?
Oh, I had my... I burnt my brakes out down at Shrewsbury because... there was a flock of sheep coming up a hill, and I went and shoved my brakes on quick. And of course, you'd always use your reverse pedal there. See, there's no gears with the handles. All your gears was with your feet.
Mm.
I could drive one now if I had one. They'd be worth some money if she'd have kept those three, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. She let them stand there and fall to pieces.
And when did you do this? Because...
After Dad left the mill, we had these three taxis.
Mm.
And then we had 50 boats and punts on the river. We used to look after them. Taught me how to drive a car along Cambridge Road.
Did he?
Yes, and he used to come over and... Your granddad, I mean.
My granddad did, yes. Yeah. Because you were telling me, my nan came along and pinched him.
Probably. Yes, he used to come after me.
Well, he was a chauffeur for the Earl of Sandwich as well.
I know he was. EW1, number of his car was.
Yeah, and then he had...
Sandwich. He had... EW1, your father looked like a toff driving, you
did
know.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Very smart.
Yeah.
And he used to come after your granny on a drop-handle bicycle. He used to work at Merkitts then, didn't he?
Yeah, he's a mechanic, wasn't
he? My father used to say, go on round Merkitts and see Joe and tell him that this, we used to do our own repairs with the cars, used to grind the valves in.
You didn't, did you?
And, used to take all the old Ford pieces, have a back axle down. And we used to take the plugs out and clean those. And,
yeah. Didn't people think it was a bit strange in them days, having a woman chauffeur?
They used to get out of the way when they saw me coming. But they were happy days in that old Ford. They used to say, you'd send Connie along to take us to St. Ives shopping. I used to wait there all day long for these old fogies to go shopping. And don't charge them anything, you know. I hadn't got any money to go and get a cup of tea or anything with.
No.
Because those days it... I mean, in sixpence a mile, he charged this old fella that I drove around Wales. I kept count of all the mileage. He put my speedometer on.
Mm.
And when I got back, he said, there you are, there's 5 golden sovereigns, and you can buy your wedding dress for that. And I did. My husband used to say to me, I can run quicker than you can drive. I was a very steady driver. He used to say, you're a nuisance on the road. I used to get up at 6, and Reverend Oldsley from Witten used to have his own parish, and these, Witten aerodrome was a sanatorium then.
Mm-hmm.
I used to drive him up there for 6:30 communion service, and play the organ.
Did
when
you?
I got there, he used to have a little, one of these little harmonium things.
Yeah.
He used to take him up again in the afternoon.
And do the same thing, play
the organ. Same thing, then he used to go to Broughton and take the services at Broughton as well.
Mm-hmm. In 1947, I mean, you must have, because I mean, with the floods and everything, you must have put in a lot of hours, did you?
I have. When the floods were, I went away from here on the Monday night. We was patrolling the bank, you see. Well, on the middle of the night, I was come walking down the bank, hunting me up to go and get steam up on the dredger. To work to load the barges for the flood, and I—that's what I had to do. I had to go up,
That was the Monday night when I went away from home, and I never got back no more till the next Saturday dinner time. And when I come back, the butcher on the top of Station Road, he said, "I've been looking for you." He stopped me. He said, "They want you back as soon as ever you can get." So that's how I had to go. I've just come home and got a little bit of extra food, and then I went back. And I was there again till about the middle of next week, I think.
And this would be living on the houseboat as well?
Yeah, we had a houseboat. Yeah. But there was times when you got on the houseboat, you couldn't go to sleep because there'd be somebody else come wanting some coal or something in the bottom of the yard. You see, it was a coal lump. Well, these tug fellas want some coal for their stoves on their tugs. So you'd have them come rattling over in the night and wait. Yeah.
Because you said the tugs, used to go buy coal or anything?
No, they went with diesel.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for heating inside the houseboat?
Well, we'd got a cooking range.
Yeah.
Like people had in their own kitchens about. We had a cooking range.
And that was filled by what?
That went by coal.
That went by coal. Yeah, so it keep you nice and warm?
We kept it in there all night, yeah.
How long did it actually take to get rid of all the water or to...
Well, that take about a fortnight to get real clear of it.
Because they had troops as well, didn't they?
Oh, they had some troops come down here, but they was only helping to fill some of the clay bags and things like that, you see. As they dredged them out of the pits at Ely, they had the troops there filling sacks and stacking them all in the barges, so they wouldn't take so much lifting out. What, you ain't got no dredges then to lift them out, you see, because you couldn't move your dredges from under the bridges because the water was over.
I see. There's some more photographs now. Your wife keeps putting this
in. That's on the Station Road.
Is that you standing against?
Yes, that's me standing there.
We should explain you can see the road on the right-hand side.
Yeah, my hair stood here, you see.
And you'd be lower than the...
Oh, yeah, we're a lot lower on the road.
When you went away on the Sunday night, and the water was coming up, it was on the Sunday night, and I had a daughter. You see her on the other photo, a little girl. And I said, "What have I got to do if the water comes up?" He said, "Well, open the front door and it'll run out the back. The back's lower." And on that Sunday night, I was up till midnight taking jam and pickles and everything upstairs. And what I could think of, you know, move myself, and the piano we'd put on too.
Because you'd be alone as well, wouldn't you?
Yes, I was alone, and the house stood on its own. We'd got neighbours each side, and that was one of the worst nights of my life. The people, you know, kept walking by and lorries and that. And I put my daughter to bed, but I didn't. I sit in his fireman's coat. I didn't do no other. And the wind got up and the fire. I had to let the fire out. Mm. But it was worse than ever any bombing. I weren't scared when the, you know, planes. Not so much as I was then.
My mother had to work 6 weeks a year to buy us all our shoes for the year.
And where would your mother have worked?
She walked nearly to Ely, Stuntney, you know, she'd go down Stuntney Hill. On the left, that flat bit of land all along there, that was all onions. And you had to not get your name down, they raced. They walked or went in a donkey cart. We had a lot of donkeys here, only they called them dickies. And if you could afford that out of your money, you could go for 1 or 6 a week. You could have a ride in a dicky cart. Well, not many people paid for that. They walked. My mother walked. And I had to stay away from school, as the school hadn't broken up, and run the house, look after the children. And the campaign, they called it a campaign, like they do with the sugar beet, lasted 6 weeks. And there they sat, and they had to start work at 8 in the morning. They'd been up, got their husbands off to work, got the children off to school, probably carted the water, they called it carting the water, to do all their week's washing when they got home at night, ready to light the copper. And then they'd walk all that way to Stuntney and sit there peeling these little cocktail onions. And the top money they could ever earn was 12 shillings. And that was for heaven knows how many hours.
So 1 and 6 months would have certainly eaten into that 12 shillings. Mm. That 1 and 6 months would have certainly eaten into their...
Yes. And there's a little tale attached to that. I don't know if this will sound silly to you, but it's all part of my life. We had three girls, you see, and then my stepsister. And she loved my eldest brother, who was much younger than me. We weren't jealous of him, we girls. We all loved him. And we didn't have shoes. Nobody had shoes until they were two. And we didn't wear shoes during the school holidays. That wore them out. So, but Herbert, being a boy, he'd got to have some shoes. And we weren't jealous. So Mother went up the co-op then, was where Piers the chemist is. And she chose these shoes. They were brown kid. And they were kid. And they had some little butterflies on. And of course it was only tinsel, but as far as we were concerned, it was gold. And they were gold. And they were 2 and 6 pence. And she paid a deposit of 6 pence. And then she paid 6 pence a week until she paid for them. And she went 2 miles further round to come round to the town every week to pay that 6 pence. When I think of it, she used to take a short cut the other days. Even so, she walked 7 miles each way, but she used to come round and pay that 6 pence. And the great day came. She finished paying the 2 and 6 pence for these brown shoes. And we all gathered together. Father was at work. And Herbert was going to have these shoes. And all Soham, I told everybody at school, my brother was having some brown kids' shoes, but they got golden butterflies. So there was news all through the school that Blanche Goose's brother had got shoes with golden butterflies. And he never had a pair of shoes on his feet. And we propped him up in the corner. And we gathered all round, all the whole lot of us. My stepsister was at home then. And he was laughing. He was always laughing. He was fat. And he took his first step. Well, you know, the picture of my mother and all those miles she'd walked to buy that pair of shoes. And the joy that we had got out of it. And we didn't mind him having shoes with golden butterflies. We didn't care a bit. We loved it. And our happiness as we were all round seeing him with his shoes on, it was lovely.